Hello, hello. Welcome to Add This to Your List. This is Fumi Simano, joined by Mark J. Parker and Tom Chuba.
Hello.
Sure is.
It is our 99th episode.
99.
We are one away from 100.
Yes, we're old and we like it.
We've got a good show for you guys today. We're going to do some housekeeping and headlines, and we're going to get into our list, and then we're going to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Clueless.
Yes.
Which is so much fun. Well, I guess like two of us are big fans. Maybe not all of us are big fans.
Yeah, but you'll have to wait
and see. It was such an iconic film when we were younger. So.
Sure was.
So iconic.
Are you delayed, Tom?
I hope you were.
I think you are.
Gotta love technology, baby.
You're Ty in this group. You're totally Ty, and Fumi and I are Sharon Dion. So, okay, Ty.
That is hilarious. So anyway, we'll get into housekeeping and headlines first, kicking it off with housekeeping, a topic that Tom and Mark are obsessed with constantly talking about. Oh my God, Halloween, what's going on with it?
Oh my God, yeah. So after months of people guessing, you know, hey, at this time in 2017, or no, at this time in 2018, we had a trailer for Halloween. It was supposed to be released in October. We're now 3 months away from October 2020, when Halloween Kills is supposed to come out. What the heck is going on? So finally, Jason Blum, John Carpenter, and
David Gordon Green,
they partnered up and they kind of just said, hey, we're not going to torture you anymore. We are trying to figure out how to get this into theaters. There's no way to do it this October. There's too much uncertainty. And we're delaying it until October 2021, and thereby pushing Halloween Ends, the third movie in Gordon Green's trilogy, to 2022. They did release a 30-second teaser to kind of keep people at bay, which was fucking awesome, I thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great. It has Jamie Lee
really?
Curtis.
Who cares at this point if the movie doesn't come out for another year?
I know. It's torture.
I know. I was kind of like, so you're pushing it a whole goddamn year and you're just giving me like don't give me anything right now. Give me space. You know?
Yeah,
let me grieve.
So I know you guys had said offline that you were surprised that they weren't going to, that Universal wasn't going to try and test out a VOD approach. However, here's what happened and here's what I think changed their minds, if they were thinking this at all. Somebody apparently, some regular Joe, tweeted Jason Blum and said, please, please do not release this movie on VOD. This is the kind of movie that needs to be seen in a packed theater with everybody screaming, and I am willing to wait a full year. And anybody else who is, please like my tweet. And like 6,000 people liked the guy's tweet. So Jason Blum responded to that guy's tweet with just ... an ellipsis. And the next day they made the announcement about the move.
Over 6,000 tweets, that's nothing.
I mean, I don't know.
I just am sort of annoyed by, I don't know. The whole thing just shows us, everyone, that the movie theaters control everything. It's not actually the studios. The power is in the theaters. It's in the exhibitors. It's AMC, Regal, because Universal just few weeks ago said, we love this whole on-demand thing. We are having such success with Invisible Man,
Trolls,
and all this shit. All of you are loving it because, yes, who wants to go to a movie theater, right? Ever, but we know Tom loves them. So at least right now. But I just feel like if they just released it in, you know, this year in October, it would be a massive success at home. Who wouldn't want to watch the new Halloween Kills on Halloween at home?
Here's what I think they're going to end up doing right now. They've pushed Candyman back to the date that Halloween was supposed to dominate, and I have a feeling they're going to test Candyman on VOD. I really do think that that's going to end up there.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting thought, Tom. I wasn't thinking that, and works for me.
I don't think they're going to put Candyman on VOD. I think they're going to end up pushing it until 2021, too.
Because it's very weird. It's very weird they didn't push that into the next year.
I know.
Like The Purge
and
Halloween.
I found that odd, too.
Right? Yeah. Huh.
We'll see what happens. Mark, what do you have?
So a little bit of housekeeping on my end. I have a whole TV update for us. We've talked about a lot of these shows on this show, Add This to Your List. Some updates on Katie Keene and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Bye-bye, girls. You are canceled, which I was surprised by. Especially
I thought Sabrina was a hit.
Yeah, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina has a diehard following. Yeah. But
it's four seasons. How many seasons do you want it to do?
Well, it's really been two seasons. They've split right. their seasons into two, but yes, it's really four seasons.
Yeah, it's four seasons. It's four parts, they say. So it's really two longer seasons, which really aren't long. That's like what regular TV was like 10 years ago. So it really isn't that many episodes, but I just was surprised. Yeah, when you think of it, the number of episodes, yeah, that sounds like enough. But I just feel like I know a lot of people that love this show, and it's got a major online following. So I was surprised, because also it has a critical praise as well. It's not.
I honestly don't think it's Netflix's brand. I think if it were on any other network, I totally agree with you. That's it would probably still be going, but I don't think that Netflix doesn't really go into a market where they're going to be putting out 5, 6, 7 seasons of a show.
They don't
like
do that
anymore. The Crown. They actually said that they were going to end it after season 5, and then it was a huge shock to everybody that they're coming back for season 6. And I think that even was like, oh, people are like, oh, you guys are going to keep doing this. Okay, that's surprising.
Right.
But I just don't think it's their. I don't think it's the way they work.
And it's funny. It used to be because Orange had what, like seven seasons. So I think they're, I think you're right, Flume. I think they're stripping it back because we know with like Santa Clarita Diet and other shows of the past, like they're kind of shockingly stopped.
Dead to Me. They're stopping Dead to Me.
Dead to Me.
And that's
after
that's the other thing. Yep. Dead to Me has been renewed for season 3 and it's its final season, which I love that show. We've mentioned it a little bit on the show. I'm a little surprised because it's a half hour binge. You can watch that in one day, one afternoon, one night. So yeah, that's ending. The Kominsky Method, which Fumi has praised, that's ending already after just a couple seasons. And then Ozark, which I'm super behind. I know everyone's raving about season 3.
Yeah, it's that's ending back at season 4 too.
Yeah, one longer season is left. So it is surprising that these big hits.
All I gotta say is, if I were Stranger Things, I'd start getting nervous.
Well, Stranger Things, I think it's definitely renewed for season 4, but I don't know how many more they have it in them. I think they even have said they don't want to go further than like maybe 5. So,
interesting.
But it's interesting. I mean, I don't know. These shows are successes for them. Award successes, critical, fan favorites. So I'm just surprised that they want to just outright kill it, because we haven't really seen a streamer do a spinoff yet, have we? I'm sure maybe we have, but I'm just not thinking about it. Because I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there's a Dead to Me spinoff just to keep some characters going. I don't know.
Maybe.
So, we'll see. That little TV update, I thought I'd give that to you. But yeah, basically, Katie Keene and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, they are run by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa. Sorry, Roberto, I'm going to butcher your name there. But and he also had The Bride's pilot, a Dracula-themed pilot. So he's quickly, over the last few years, becoming a TV juggernaut, but he's not having such good luck right now. At least he has Riverdale. That seems to be the only hit in that whole Archie universe with Katie Keene and Sabrina. So yeah.
Blame it on 2020.
I guess
Tom.
Yes. On the headlines front, I found this super interesting. So the Academy has been trying to diversify themselves and kind of modernize themselves, as we've been following the Motion Picture Academy, as just to be clear. And among the changes that they're recently making, they announced this past week that they're now going to allow agents who have always been able to have a membership in the Academy. They were just always prohibited from voting. Agents are now going to have voting rights. And I find that really interesting, because to me, that seems a little conflict of interesty. Because if I'm, let's say, Meryl Streep's agent and she's nominated, am I really going to vote for who I think merits the award? Or am I just going to vote for my fucking client? I don't know.
See, when this first had headlines, I thought to myself, well, this is messed up. Like, agents shouldn't be allowed to vote. But then I thought about it, and I was like, agents voting is no different than anyone else in the Academy voting. Yeah. Meryl Streep is in the Academy. She can vote for herself, too. Like, it doesn't really
fair point.
Compute.
And people are going to vote for their friends, not necessarily the best. So,
I mean, I feel like people even admit that they don't have time to watch all of the things that get nominated. A lot of times they probably don't vote for things that they haven't even seen themselves. They just happen to be like, oh, someone said that this is great, so I'm going to vote for this, you know? Yeah. So I feel like I don't know. I don't think it's going to change anything in terms of what gets nominated.
I think the weirder thing is that agents and like casting directors and then like publicists, there are branches of the Academy Awards that have these groups, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Some that are in that branch do vote, but it's just weird to have voters that their branches aren't actually recognized as an award. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of weird. You have your cinematographer's branch, you have your actor's branch, and those are branches that can get an award. So agents, there's not going to be, eventually, I don't think there would ever be, that'd be weird, to have a best agent award at the Oscars.
That's an interesting argument, Mark. Yeah. I like that argument.
Right?
That if you're not going to be recognized within a branch, then you just don't necessarily should get voting rights.
Right. It seems a little weird to me, because it's like, okay, well, I don't know. Like, do we have other branches that... I don't know. It just seems kind of weird to me. Yeah. Mm. I don't know. So, whatever.
And then you have news that I also love.
Yeah.
I'm excited about these two things. So
absolutely. Right. So just this news that I have, this headline, the two headlines that are similar in topic just broke the other day. First up, you guys might have heard me a couple episodes ago, we were talking about, you know, TV, of course, and I mentioned that Ruby Rose on the CW's Batwoman, I don't watch it, but I guess it's good, and it's very LGBTQ+, but I doubt Tom will ever watch it. She was Batwoman, but she, for whatever weird reason, has left the show, mm-hmm. I guess quit, or they weren't working out and parted ways. But so the CW has just recast. Well, I say recast, they have found a new lead, but it is not the same character.
Right.
Because, which I think is very interesting, because I'm blanking on the character's name who plays Batwoman. Kane. She is
Selina.
Gay. No, Selina's Catwoman.
Oh.
I forget. Basically, Ruby Rose was Batwoman and played a gay character. What? I missed it.
Sorry, no, this is hilarious because I feel like whoever's listening is going to be like, Katie Ruby, Batwoman, Catwoman, what?
Katie Sabrina Selena Batwoman. coming to this fall for you. But basically, long story short, everybody, I'm a little tongue-tied tonight and I haven't been drinking. Batwoman will now be played by a black actress. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with her.
I am not either.
Lavicia something. I'm not sure how to say her name, but she looks beautiful and this is super exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Javicia Leslie will be Batwoman. And yes, as far as I know, she is not only the first black Batwoman, but Entertainment Weekly reported that she is the first, maybe black TV actress to play a superhero. So cool.
Okay.
But what's really cool, I thought, was the creators of the show, the showrunners, did not want to have her play Ruby Rose's character because I guess Ruby Rose's character is a lesbian or bisexual, at least. She's queer. And so they don't want to, you know, kind of wipe away the queerness of the show. So
she won't be a queer character?
Yes. So that's right. The new Batwoman, I believe, is not queer. Let's see. She says, I am extremely proud to be the first black actress to play the iconic role of Batwoman on television. And she herself in real life is bisexual. So she's honored to join the show. But yeah, they don't mention if this new character is bisexual or gay. So she might be playing straight. But the cool thing is overall that Ruby Rose's character, even if she's not on the show, it's not that this, you know, new woman is replacing her. They are going to keep that character at least in topic of conversation as a gay character. So I thought that was cool. They're not going to just sloppily recast. So that's Batwoman news. And then the other cool thing, reboot, you know, casting news is The Wonder Years is coming to ABC. A lot of people are kind of like, you know, oh, my beloved Wonder Years. But I think this is cool because not only is it coming back, it will be still set in the 60s and 70s, but it's going to be a different family and it's going to be a black family.
Yeah, super cool.
It's going to be taking place in the South. So super cool. I think this is a really cool way to bring it back.
And this is from Lee Daniels, right?
Yes, Foom. Mm-hmm. Isn't that so interesting? Because I would not have thought Lee Daniels would be the, you know, the go-to person for, you know, kind of like a family dramedy. But I think it's super cool. We obviously know he has a great track record. So yeah, no word on when we'll see this. I'm sure at least a year, maybe even more. But yeah. The Wonder Years is coming back, all black cast, set in the late 60s, early 70s in the southern part of America. So that'll be very interesting. I assume a lot of good topics to be discussed on that show.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's it for our housekeeping and headlines.
All right, people. So, well, I first have to say real quick, guys, I checked out I May Destroy You. You listeners, you might have heard us rave about it last week, Tom.
Mm-hmm. And food,
loved it. Guys, it's so good. I completely agree with you. Binged most of it all in one night. Had to wait a week for the, what was it, fifth episode that yep. we're on right now. Awesome. Awesome. I have to say, I totally agree with you. But guys, that segues into our list segment. Tom and Fumi, you guys ready to get into it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So people, this is when we get into our list of the episode. We are going to tell you what we're loving, what we're hating. We are entertainment nerds and we wear that badge proudly. Let's go with Foom. Fumi, tell us what is on your list this week.
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to talk about is Good Boy, and it is one of the Into the Dark films on Hulu. Yes. I'm surprised that they're still doing these, but I checked it out. It had been on my watch list for a minute. I don't know which month they came out in, so sorry, I guess listeners.
Maybe July, because I saw it pop up on Hulu just recently.
Yeah,
so
right?
Maybe it's this month? Yeah.
And so I checked it out. It stars Judy Greer, and it is an ad. That's why I checked it out. I was like, you know what, Judy Greer, I'll watch this because I'm a fan of hers. She's great. So the premise of the film is essentially a woman who is older. I guess her character's in her maybe late 30s, early 40s. She is a journalist. She's put her entire career ahead of like family. She's starting to freak out about like having children and settling down. So she decides to like dating isn't really working for her. She hasn't found like the right person. So she decides to freeze her eggs, or she's thinking about freezing her eggs. But in the meantime, she's told to placate her loneliness, she should adopt a dog. so she gets a dog. It's this cute little thing. It's so tiny, probably weighs like 10 pounds. I don't know what kind of dog it is. But the dog ends up becoming this like murderous beast. And anytime anyone will like rise her anxiety or makes her anxious, and all she says is like, you're making me anxious, please stop, to anyone who like upsets her, the dog turns into this like monstrous, murderous thing, creature, and like kills people. And instead of her, I guess, handling it properly, she decides to like clean up the crimes. So, so that's the movie. It's
sounds like a Goosebumps book.
I know, right? It is utterly ridiculous, but it's actually kind of funny. I would definitely not say that it's like scary by any means. No. This is more so on like the comedy horror side of things, but it's good. It's a good solid like hour and a half. I don't even know if it's even that long. Into the Dark movie. It's on Hulu. You should totally check it out. I mean, it's very humorous.
Does the dog become like a werewolf or just some kind of
creature? I don't even know what kind of creature you would call it. It's like a large, it doesn't even really resemble what the dog looks like when it's a little dog, when it's a good boy. But it just turns into this thing and it just like latches onto someone's neck and just like rips it out.
Oh,
it's really funny. It's really hilarious. But I have to admit, like, the people who piss her off, like, they kind of deserve what's coming to them, you know? So, and she played, like, Judy Greer just does such a great job of playing it off. Like you think she's really upset, and then she just, like, sits there and thinks about it for a second. She's like, good boy. After the dog kills someone, it's really, really funny. So you should definitely check it out. It's honestly, like, there's nothing more to the movie than that. Like, there are some other elements, and it actually ended in a bit of a surprise, in my opinion. I didn't think it was going to end the way that it did. But it's fun. It's just like a fun, silly, silly movie.
Cute. It definitely looks fun.
Yeah. And it's one of their better ones, I have to say, because that series, you know, touch and go. For real.
Yeah.
And then the second thing on my list is Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, yes.
It is so good. It's on Netflix, and Netflix has revived this series. It's a reboot from a 1980-1990 series. Mm-hmm. We are all kids of the 90s, and I texted you guys offline about how the theme song to that still freaks me out to this
still
day.
Still to this day, it reminds me so much of Halloween.
Oh my gosh, it's so scary.
Question for you guys, because I remember the show, definitely. I remember it. I was actually more creeped out by the host of it. Something about him really, like...
He was creepy too. Right? But he's not a part of the reboot anyway.
I think he passed away. But the song... but maybe he's still overseeing the show. But the song, did the song change for the new version?
They made it creepier. I swear to God they did. They had to have.
It's
a little different. It's more instrumental. It's way creepier. I just remember being a kid and like my mom watching it and me like begging her to like change the channel, you know, but, it's still creepy. So the reboot is hostless. It's definitely an ad. They are 6 self-contained stories. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to have like a second season or a second half of the first episode where they're going to have another 6 episodes. So like Netflix is going to be releasing more.
Are they half hour or hour?
They're hours.
Hours. Okay. They're like 45 to an hour, right? Yeah.
Not all of the episodes, in my opinion, are worth it. Like they do a UFO one, which is like a throwaway, in my opinion. It really isn't that good.
It's well shot. I thought it was well shot.
Beautifully shot. Yeah.
With the recreations and everything. But I agree, Fum. I think also we've sort of been there, done that with the whole, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple standout episodes to me are, I believe it's the second one, where obviously the premise are these are real life stories of people who have died or have gone missing, and they're unsolved. Like they legitimately, like, yes, this is for like a, you know, an entertainment factor, but legitimately, like if anybody knows of any of these, like you should contact the show and help out solve. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so standouts for me, the first episode is about a man who dies falling through a roof, but the authorities cannot figure out how he got there and how he fell. Like mathematically, physically, all of the different points of impact don't make any sense.
Yeah.
There are like his phone is left, but the phone wasn't even scratched. Like it's a complete bewilderment.
But that one was freaky.
Right? That one was a little creepy. And then another episode I thought which was spectacular was, well, there's 2 more. The second episode, I believe, where it's a missing mom, which is actually rather a heartbreaking.
It's very sad. That one especially is heartbreaking. You're right, Foom. So a lot of them are sad because they are unsolved. And so people, even the guy that fell, I felt so bad for his wife.
Because they were newlyweds, practically. Yeah. Uh-huh. The second story is absolutely heartbreaking about a missing mom. And like they interview her son and then her, in my opinion, the husband did it. Like
her like second husband, right? Something and how he won't give the son
her ashes.
Or anything
of hers. It's so sick. It's twisted. Mm-hmm. And then there's another episode which is fascinating. It's actually a British story, which I was very surprised by
British or French? I can't remember.
Or French. You're right.
French, right? Yes.
Because I don't think the original did anything that wasn't American. Mm. And so I thought that was really interesting and a deviation because it's a French
like subtitles?
Story.
Subtitles.
Yeah. Like, oh, wow.
Full
it
on
is,
French.
It is a full you on have, French investigation.
And it's a fantastic episode. But, Foom, so did you have a hard time? I realized, because you're so right, this was maybe the first time I've watched a show like this where it's true crime, it's real. And I had a very hard time at first, like also reading the subtitles. Because normally, you know, we've watched films with subtitles. Mm. But something about a show like this where I want to really study faces and places and pictures.
That's a good point, Mark.
I was definitely a little overwhelmed by everything on the screen. I had to keep rewinding.
Yeah. I think that it definitely, you're totally right. I think it definitely makes you need to pay attention a lot more because like you said, I think when you're watching a true crime like this, you want to see expressions, you want to see evidence, you want to see like locations, but this, you also have to like read the subtitles to know what's happening. But I didn't think for me, it didn't take away from the story because I found the story so fascinating. Oh,
this one might be my well, favorite, which I know is weird to say, but this one is
it was good.
Spooky. Spooky, yeah. Spooky.
It was creepy. It was really unfortunate. And the fact that, like, the person who did it, I think authorities, they all know who did it. They just can't find the person. I definitely think if you want to check out this series, you should watch the French one first. And then if you decide you want to continue, you can watch the other ones. But for me, the standout was definitely the missing mom and the French one were fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So both unsolved mysteries. But yeah, Unsolved Mysteries, Into the Dark, Good Boy. I guess I was in like a dark.
Yeah, I love it. You're feeling a little dark. Yeah. That's good. Good stuff. Yeah. Unsolved. You know? We binged all of Unsolved, all six episodes, literally in one day. Like last Sunday from like 4 to 10, we were loving it.
So, I did too. I was like, full disclosure, I had gotten the episodes earlier. And so I had watched an episode and I was like, this show's not good. But then I went back and I sat and watched and I was like, oh, this show is good.
Yeah. It's like a sprinkling of all different kinds of topics. And I like that. You know, I think that's good because you never know. People might like the UFO stuff, but.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Okay, great picks. Tom, what do you have?
Well, to continue on with the dark theme, first thing on my list is HBO's documentary. Not in a good way. First thing on my list is HBO's documentary, Welcome to Chechnya. Are you guys familiar with the Chechnya story?
Yes. I tried to watch this, but it would not get out of like Spanish, like captioning. No. Don't play me. It's supposed to be in Russian, but it wouldn't get out of like my HBO would not stop subtitle or
really
it in Spanish, so I couldn't watch it.
Oh wow, that is interesting. Well, if you need to use my HBO, let me know because weird. I'll start by saying it's an add this to your list. It's nothing that you're gonna enjoy, but it's really, really important and really, really scary. So
wait, nothing you're going to enjoy.
Well, add it to your list. You're not gonna enjoy it.
Girl, they're killing gay people and like legit.
No, I know.
Gay people. So basically, Welcome to Chechnya it's an hour and 45-minute documentary. It is a little long, it's on the long side. But it follows a group of LGBT, it's an LGBT organization in Russia that is trying to rescue people out of Chechnya, which is a subset of Russia that operates as its own state, if you will, has its own leader, has its own rules, has its own government, but is still part of Russia proper. So this LGBT group, you know, we're the first to hear about the murders going on against gay people. And it follows two or three of them who, and a couple of cases wherein they try and go and take people out of Chechnya and then get them asylum in other countries. They have footage of people being pulled over by, you know, other Chechenian people and, you know, being interrogated and, you know, being asked, are you a faggot, and getting awful, awful things done to them. So be prepared.
How do you think they got that footage?
I don't know.
And not got caught.
I don't know. It's amazing. It's amazing that these guys literally put their lives on the line because every single thing they do is dangerous. Because while Russia is freer and more liberal than Chechnya, I mean, we're still talking about Russia. So like these people could also get severely beaten or thrown in jail or even killed in Russia for being who they are and for doing what they're doing, trying to rescue.
And are the filmmakers gay themselves?
They are. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So it's just really eye-opening. It's hard to believe that this is happening in 2017, 2018 when the documentary was being filmed. But lo and behold, you know, 50 years after the Holocaust, here we go. People are being killed openly in parts of the world simply for being gay. So the documentary was really powerful and prescient and really timely. And I love it at the end. It says, you know, this LGBT organization that they follow ended up rescuing 155 people from Chechnya.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
40 of them got asylum in Canada. And then the film literally ends with a subtitle saying the Trump administration refused to accept a single person as a refugee from Chechnya. So that was like a real... like finally
that is surprising,
right? I mean, plot twist. So anyway, add that to your list. It's really important. It's really well made. It is subtitled, unfortunately, throughout the whole thing. But it's just, if you want to see how bad it is in some parts of the world, it's something that you need to watch. Second thing on my list.
And how long was this?
Yeah, I was going to say, how long? It was a doc or a series?
It's just one documentary. It's an hour and 45 minutes. It's a little on the long side. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But Tom got through it somehow. Okay.
I did in one sitting too. I was terribly disturbed after, but yes, I got through it. Not So Debbie Downer is another film on my list called Light from Light. This is a very small, very art house drama, very indie. I heard about it maybe a year or so ago, and I just threw it on my list of things to see, and it finally came out on streaming, so I decided to check it out. It's a very light movie in you know, topic matter, hence, well, that's not why it's called Light from Light, but it's a pun. Anyway, it's about a woman in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. She is a single mother with a teenager in high school, and she works at like an enterprise rental car kind of thing. At the airport, because, you know, the Smoky Mountains are a big tourist destination for a lot of people. But on the side, she has an interest in the paranormal, and she kind of dabbles in some paranormal investigations with some local paranormal groups. And basically, this guy who lost his wife in a small plane crash a year ago contacts her when he hears her being interviewed on the radio and says, you know, I my wife died a year ago. I think her presence is in this house, but I'm not sure. And she basically agrees to do this investigation for this guy for free to see what might be going on in the house, see if it's real, or see if, you know, there's some kind of scientific explanation to it. And they end up forming a beautiful friendship. Really good movie. It's an hour and like 24 minutes, not a big time commitment. It's not scary. It's not a horror movie. So while the premise is intriguing and sounds a little bit creepy, there is no creepy aspect to it. There are no jump scenes. There are no scenes of tension or suspense. It's not that kind of movie. It's literally about a woman who's interested in ghosts and trying to decide, you know, if a gentleman in her life is experiencing some kind of paranormal activity or not. Add it to your list. It stars Maren Ireland.
I love her.
Yeah, not a lot of people know her, but she was fantastic. She was really committed to the role, and I was drawn in from the very opening scene when she's being interviewed on the radio. Check it out if you got some time to kill on a rainy Sunday or something like that.
Cool. And how did you watch it, Tom? Is it streaming on something?
I watched it on Amazon, yeah.
Okay. Amazon Prime, or you paid for it?
Amazon Prime rental. It was like $2.99.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
I'll be paying for those movies, child.
I know. It's funny. Tom likes to pay. I don't know if Tom's really doing his research before, you know, selecting the
first world problems.
Yeah. Well, just remember that Just Watch app I told you guys. Just Watch or JustWatch.com. It'll help you, you know, figure out where it's located for free. Okay, well, thanks, Tom and Fumi, for those choices. I have two things as well to wrap up our list this episode. First up on Netflix is The Babysitter's Club.
Oh, my God, Babysitter's Club.
Yes.
I was so mad you wrote this down before me.
you could have, I mean, you know, you could have taken it because... Well, let me get into it, everyone. So, Babysitter's Club, as we all know, I didn't read the books, but you would have to be, you know, truly of another planet if you've never heard of the Babysitter's Club, right? So, they were a series of books. There was a movie 25 years ago that I actually liked. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, was that 25 years ago?
Yeah, right around when Clueless came out. Yep, So, I saw that. I thought it was fun. So, when this came out just earlier this month, I thought, how fun. I'm going to check it out. So if you don't know the premise, it basically is about a group of such cute, adorable girls, a good group of friends. They're middle schoolers, and they decide to start a babysitting business together in their hometown of Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Yeah.
It's so sweet, guys. This show is so sugary sweet. It is so wholesome. It is funny. They definitely poke some good, fun jokes.
They modernized it a bit.
They definitely modernized it. There's a fun joke in the first episode where, you know, they buy an old landline phone right from the 90s where you could see through it, the plastic. And the girl, Claudia, goes, "I got this on Etsy, and apparently it's iconic." And I'm like, damn right, girl. Super cute, guys. Well written. It's very nice. It's not really for me. And
that's surprising for you.
Is it? Because it's middle
and
school.
I girl. Love it. Like,
I mean,
loved it.
You loved it? Did you watch like all of
but
it?
But like, oh, I finished the entire series. But oh, also, but
it's also, half an hour. It's a nice, it's easy half breezy. An hour,
yeah. But I was a baby. Like, I read all the baby series.
Okay, good. Yeah. So this is totally for you, Foom. It's not really for me. So I feel bad that I kind of took it. But I was super interested. It stars a bunch of unknowns. Great girls. These kids
they're
are
so
going to be
cute.
They're going to be stars in a few years. I mean, they're all so great. A nice diverse cast. Mm-hmm. It also co-stars. I guess they're sort of special guest stars and not just like regulars. But Alicia Silverstone, our girl mm-hmm. from Clueless, she is the mom. There's even a Clueless joke in the first episode. Her daughter Christy, in voiceover, says something like, "I guess my mom isn't totally clueless." And I was like, mm-hmm. "Oh my god!" so there's Alicia. There is Mark. I never know how to say his last name, but he's from Royal Pains. Mark Feuerstein.
Yeah.
He's from Royal Pains, which is a big thing a few years ago. So they are kind of the parents that we're following as well as the kids. Super cute. It's just not really for me. And so with that, I can't say add this to your list. I'm going to call it a one and done. However, I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way. I am so happy this is out there. I'm happy people like Foomy, who read the books, who feel a deeper connection to it, love it. So in that regard, definitely add it to your list. For me, if you were sort of a casual, you know, 90s fan and like knew about this, it's just not something I'm going to continue. But I, totally. Again, I am so happy. You know, you guys know I teach acting classes for kids, so I'm always on the lookout for good stuff. And I cannot wait to get my hands on the script somewhere online. Send it to me if you got it out there. Because this is perfect for kids. It's perfect for families. So happy it's out there. And Alicia's great. It's fun to see her as a mom. Basically,
is there diversity?
There's diversity. Yeah. We right. have Asian. We have white. We have sort of like a young baby Zendaya actress who plays Marianne. Sort of a mix.
And they switched her character up because in the books, the only black babysitter is Jessie, who comes in later in this in the show. Okay. And Marianne is like this little brunette in the book. So for the show, they switched it up and brought in this, I guess she's mixed or biracial.
Right.
Young actress.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. And it all works. Any sort of things they're playing with and changing, at least from an outsider's point of view, it's totally working. I feel like none of it is blasphemous to the books. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's pretty loyal. And I don't know if you knew this, Foom, it's executive produced by Lucia Aniello, who was all over Broad City. She helped create Broad City.
Yes.
So that was kind of a fun connection. I do wish Babysitter's Club, from the two episodes I saw, I do wish it was every now and then a little quirkier. But at least seeing her name behind the scenes as a writer, director, and producer on the show, that right away, I was like, okay, these girls are in good hands.
You know what? Now that you say that, I think I do remember like seeing that. But when you bring it up, you only watched the first two episodes.
Yeah, I just watched the first two.
I do feel like as you get more into the series, there are moments where like the quirkiness of Broad City, like I can see it now.
Okay. Well, hearing that, then maybe I will keep up with it. Okay. That's good to know because, you know, I miss my Broad City girls.
Yeah.
But yeah, super cute guys. So if this is up your alley, please check it out. I think it's very well made, very well done. And then my next pick is I couldn't really decide what to talk about. Do I talk about Floor is Lava? Which, yes, I admit we've been watching that. I mean, I've been watching it, you know, on things. Okay. Not sober. I do not recommend watching that sober, but it's a fun game show. But no, I'm not going to talk about that. Have you guys checked that out at all? Floor is Lava?
Know what it is.
It's on Netflix. It's a fun, like, dumb. It's so dumb. Please watch
it's
it.
So stupid, Tom. Watch it you will after, last 30 oh seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And you will be like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful set. I mean, I would love to do it. But after, like, a couple episodes, Greg loves it. So, you know, we had friends over and we're like, let's watch Floor is Lava. And,
oh, my
you know,
God, I'm done.
Partake in some,
so
you know, goodies.
That is totally the show to do that on, though. Absolutely.
Oh, Foom. It is meant for pot and alcohol and Molly.
Why don't you
whatever
tell us
you
what
do.
You really were talk about.
Anyway, yes, thank you, Tom. What I really wanted to tell you about was actually a show that I liked. I wanted to talk about it a little earlier this summer when it ended. It ended about a month ago. But it's Camp Getaway on Bravo. Now I forget. Foom, I think, did we chat about this offline at all? Did you check this out?
I did watch the first episode, but I don't think we talked about it.
Okay. I am actually going to say, maybe I'm a little crazy because not a lot happens on the show, but I found it very likable. I'm going to say, if you haven't checked it out already, add Camp Getaway to your list. I think it's an add.
I'm surprised by that, Mark.
Oh, interesting. Maybe because, I don't know, COVID's got me like acting a little crazy and I just wanted some good Bravo shows. This series started, I want to say it was like late April, ended in late June. It's a nice, easy 8 episodes, 1 hour episodes. But so it follows, and Tom, you might actually be intrigued because it actually takes place in Kent, Connecticut at this place called Club Getaway. But so Bravo renamed it to Camp Getaway. So what's fun about Camp Getaway, and I think ultimately this is why I enjoyed it every episode and looked forward to it. I'm not gonna lie. I'd be like, oh my God, yes, Camp Getaway's on. It's something to like eat dinner to or like to clean to. But you know, I got married at a camp. Fumi was there. I never went to a sleepaway camp. So I've always been intrigued by it. And this is a camp for adults. Adults get to go there on the weekends and party. Now, I have no idea how these people have quote-unquote full-time jobs and then party all night long at the camp. They do it every episode. They're always like hungover the next morning. Mm-mm. But it's super fun. You are following a group of quote-unquote social coordinators, whatever that means. They're basically just actors that were available to be on the show. But so they are working at Camp Getaway. They're working for the owner and the camp director whose accent is just out of this world. She is so cockney and it's just amazing. And they're getting into fights and they're doing things wrong and they're not doing their jobs. And it's kind of like a below deck light.
Yeah.
You know, some people like Foom are like, it's a little too slow for me. But something about it, I thought it was a perfect summer fluff show. The last episode is a fun Halloween party. Each episode is like a big party or a special, you know, camper having a birthday or having a whatever. So you kind of see how the social coordinators deal with the adult campers. I thought it was fun. So I'm going to say add it to your list. It's good, silly, dumb drama. You know, will they, won't they? Are they going to get fired? That kind of stuff. And I think maybe it was just a nice something else to watch other than Housewives because, you know, I love Housewives, but I, you know, it's kind of wetting my palate with something a little different. So check it out on Bravo. And that is our list, people. So we had to add it all up to recap. We had Good Boy on Hulu. That is an add this to your list. Sounds great. I think I would love that. And of course on Netflix, guys, if you haven't already, binge, baby, binge, Unsolved Mysteries. Totally. Add that to your list. Tom gave us also two ads, Welcome to Chechnya, an HBO doc, and Light from Light, a smaller indie film, smaller budget film that you can rent right now. And then I gave you Camp Getaway, which I think is an ad. Fumi thinks no. You be the judge and let us know what you think. That's on Bravo. You can watch on demand. And The Babysitter's Club, also on Netflix. Fumi loves. I like. For me, it might be a pass, but now that I know it gets a little quirky, maybe I'll keep watching. Let us know what you guys think. Send us a message on social and tell us what you think of these shows and movies. And that's it.
Cool. Very good. Well, as we said at the top of the episode, we are going to do a little bit of a Clueless celebration here because 2000 marks the 25th anniversary of Clueless. So Clueless, if you can't do math, came out in 1995. Mm-hmm. Just to give you guys a little context, like we did when we talked about another movie a few episodes ago, Clueless made, we did this with Tu Wong Fu. Clueless made around $55 million at the box office back in 1995, which today for inflation would basically translate to $95
million. Yes, girls.
So didn't quite join the $100 million club, but still a substantial hit. It has become part of millennials' DNA, I feel like. Totally. I feel like that's an accurate thing to say. And so basically, we're just going to chat about the film, and I'm going to pose two questions to Fumi Mark, and I'm going to answer them myself. One, what do you think made this film so memorable and such a why do you think it made such a stamp on the era of the 90s? And number two, do you think it holds up well? So I'll turn it over to you guys first. What do you think? Why was it such a hit?
I think it was such a hit because, well, okay, so I'm just going to put this into perspective of me being a 10-year-old, or was I 10 in 95? Yeah, a 10-year-old in Jersey, being in middle school. Like, my friends and I watched it, and Like, I had never been in California. I didn't know what California was. It was, like, a fascinating, like, ideal of, like, this is what teenagers are like in California, the way they dress, the way they talked. It was so hilarious. It was so funny. Like, I remember my friends and I going out and wanting to dress like them with, like, the skirts and, like, the sweaters over the shirts and, like, as if. I remember people doing, like, the whatever signs, you know? Yeah. Like, it was so, like, iconic in a way that was just, I don't know, it was just ridiculous. It was over the top. It was ridiculous, but it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just had so many, like, one-liners and just funny little connotations about life. So maybe because we were in middle school, we attached ourselves to it more, thinking like, oh, is this what high school was going to be like?
Yeah, I don't like know this, if I was this in will high be school. Our future yeah. in a way. Like, yeah. You know,
I don't know if I was in high, if I was in high school, I would have probably gravitated to it as much. But being in middle school, I was obsessed. Like, I was obsessed. I was excited. Yeah. I loved it. Like, we watched it, and I think we watched it again and again and again and again and again. Yeah. I mean, it's on Netflix, and even we were talking about what we were going to discuss for this. I had already watched it when I saw it on Netflix.
Oh, I love that.
I was like bored one night, and I was like, "What's on?" And I saw that Clueless was on. I was like, "I'm going to watch it," because it's one of those movies that you could have on the background and just like go about your whatever you're doing. Like, I know it so well at this point that I could recite whatever they're saying. Uh-huh. I could be in the kitchen having it on and then crack up at a scene. I'm not even seeing it, but I know exactly what's happening. Yeah.
It's like a nice warm blanket, just welcoming you back home.
It is. Alicia Silverstone did such a good job as Cher. Paul Rudd to this day is still freaking adorable, and he was adorable there.
The casting was spectacular. Perfect. And most of them, R.I.P. Brittany Murphy, but most of them are still working pretty consistently. I mean, Paul Rudd's huge, of course. So,
well, R.I.P. Stacey Dash. And
yeah, she's crazy.
Stacey's working in a different way.
But it was such a good show. But I will say that the only thing about the movie that I was like, even then, I was like, this is weird, is the whole stepbrother, stepsister thing.
It is weird,
to this
right?
day, I'm still kind of like, that is such an odd choice. But I mean, whatever. It's still a cute movie.
Well, it's funny because it's a modern retelling of Emma, which I've actually never seen any version of Emma. I never read the
book. Neither have I.
There was a recent one last year, I think.
Yeah, earlier this year, yeah. For the 20th, it's kind of funny, a 25th anniversary of Clueless, we get a new version of Emma. Do any of us know, does maybe Emma end up with her stepbrother? Is that a thing?
I mean, that was kind of a thing back in the 1800s, right?
In the 14th century. Sure.
Yeah. No one else is around. Yeah.
Mark, why do you think go ahead. Why do you think it was so iconic?
I think it was so iconic and still to this day is so still iconic and beloved. It is the perfect blend of comedy, romance, and fantasy. It's laugh out loud funny. You immediately relate to them. Even if you were like us younger, or if maybe, you know, there are older people that love it, you relate to them, you get it. Like when she says, ugh, as the guys are like throwing themselves on her, it's like, yeah, unfortunately, like totally. I bet many women are like, yep, I've been there. But also it's fantasy, the clothes. Like this, it's funny. Everyone always is like, says that Sex and the City was the one that really like to start like the crazy fashion. I feel like actually it was Clueless. This fashion was wacky, like Dion's like it was fantasy. It was like reality meets fantasy, and so in that way it was like the perfect, lovely, funny comedy, you know, like something for all ages just to enjoy, because I feel like a lot of men quote it and love it too, like straight men. It's like, oh yeah, everyone knows Clueless, and it's because it was like that perfect blend, you know. Amy Heckerling, you did a great job, because she wrote it, directed it, and apparently she worked with like a linguistics professor from UCLA who like knew all the slang. So that script is just
that's
awesome.
Funny.
Yeah.
So I actually don't think it holds up well. I had seen it once as a teenager.
I can't believe you're going on record with this.
Yeah, I'm going on record. I'm going to be lambasted. I know.
I can't believe you had only seen it once until then. Your second watch of it was just like a few days ago. That to me,
crazy.
Literally, like I'm shaking.
So I actually thought it was a little cheesy. I thought the Alicia and Paul Rudd stuff was really weird, to Fumi's point. But I will say it did feel super current. Like some of the conversations that Alicia and Paul have, like current events related, still are really relevant. And like the scene when she says, you know, the maid is from like Mexico or whatever. And he's like, she's from Guatemala.
Guatemala.
Like, it was like, oh, that's like 2020 right now. Totally. You know what I mean? So a lot of that stuff still held up really well. So I found that interesting and that gave me a bit of a chuckle. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know what it is, guys. I didn't love it the second time the way I still can watch Never Been Kissed or Can't Hardly Wait. I don't know. You know what it is too? Cher's supposed to be like one of the most popular girls in school, but you never really see scenes of her with a lot of friends other than Dion.
Yeah, that's true. She's very clicky. That's why I love her. It's like, like hang out with
your group. That was part of the point.
Yeah. She was untouchable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So. Now, real quick, would you guys say, like, what would you say is your favorite line from the movie? I just need to know. Like, Tom, you just rewatched it. What's a line or a phrase that you just love? Anything?
Nothing stuck with me.
Oh, my God. Get the fuck off this podcast. Boom, anything? I know we just
I don't know.
Things,
I know.
Is there like one?
Probably with the rolling with the homies.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Or no, you know what it is? It's when she's taking her driver's test. She hits the car and she's like, oh, should I leave a note? Like
that's a good one.
Kills me.
Oh my God. That's a good one. Right? Exactly. It's super hard to pick one. But I find myself still saying, it's so dumb, but when Ty says, hope not sporadically, like remember when she learns the word sporadically? I still say that. Yeah. Like, okay, see you later. And then even in my mind, I'm like, hope not sporadically. I just love it. I could quote it with you, Foom, like the whole entire thing. The freeway scene is iconic.
Iconic.
The freeway.
So let me pose a question to you guys, because as I was rewatching this, I said, okay, so Alicia, definitely like that's the role that she's gonna be known for probably the rest of her life, the rest of her career, right? But do you think Reese Witherspoon could have played the role just as well?
I'm sure she was probably up for it at the time.
Oh, totally.
Right? Because
I think that because when Reese's when she first started out, her accent was still kind of prevalent.
Oh yeah, Southern.
So I think that because of that, maybe not so much. Like I don't know, Alicia just embodied like what you think of a California girl.
Absolutely. And did you guys know? I was reading a fun fact today that when Alicia says in her class, she says the Haitians. She's talking about Haitians, but she pronounced it Haitians. That was real. And Amy Heckerling like told people do not correct her. Like just keep that.
Oh, so that see.
So see, like that was her. She was this awesome, like you know, not stupid, but just awesome, kind of a little aloof girl that fit this role to a T. So
yeah.
I can't. I mean, it's hard to picture anyone else but her. She was. I feel like it was probably Alicia's best work of her career because maybe that was her. She just did it.
She
perfectly.
Was Cher. She totally was.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of listeners, before we go, we have a little bit of a surprise for you. We are going to act out a very brief scene from the movie.
Oh.
Fumi, you want to give us a little background?
Sure. What is
it? It's the scene where Cher gets robbed.
Okay. Okay, so this is a hilarious scene. So we were talking about rolling with the homies before. So after a house party in the Valley, which again, especially living in California, all of these things are even more hilarious.
Oh, I bet.
To me.
Oh my God.
After a house party in the Valley, Cher goes home. She needs to go home to Beverly Hills, and she gets into a fight with
Elton
in the car, and she gets out and he leaves her, and then Cher is alone in a parking lot, and this is what happens.
Okay.
All right. So you want to direct me and Mark? I'm going to play several roles, and Mark is going to play the iconic Cher.
I'm going to play the one and only Cher Horowitz.
Okay. I cannot wait to hear what this is going to sound like.
Okay. Ready? Okay. Leave me alone. Hey, where are you going? Oh, shit.
Valley information.
Yeah. Do you have the number of a cab company?
Which one?
I don't know which one. What do you have out here?
We have Valley Cabs. Hand it over. Give me the phone. Okay, bag two. Come on. All right, now, get down on the ground. Face down. Come on.
Oh, no. You don't understand. This is an Alaya.
An Awada?
It's like a totally important designer.
And I will totally shoot you in the head. Get down. All right, count to 100. Thank you.
1, 2... The evening had turned into a royal mess. Sexually harassed, robbed. I didn't know the number of the party, so I couldn't call Dion, and Daddy would kill me if he knew where I was. There was just one person left to call, and I really, really didn't want to call him.
Hello?
Josh, you busy?
It's Mel's daughter.
So, okay, I was at this party, and my designated driver tried to attack me. So I got out so he'd stop, but then he drove off and deserted me. And then this guy with a gun held me up, took my money and my phone, and he yelled at me, and he forced me to ruin my dress.
Okay, okay, look, where are you?
Sun Valley.
Man, you owe me. Click. And cut.
And scene.
Oh my God, that was utterly hysterical. I actually don't think, as long as I've known you, Mark, I don't think I've ever actually seen you act.
Oh.
That was so good.
Oh, thank you. I watched the clip.
You embodied Cher there. Tom, you did a great job too.
Thank you. We'll have to put this video out there. So
yes. Oh, we totally should. Yeah, because we were holding our props. We had phones in our hands. But yeah,
hilarious.
I've always loved that line, an Awada.
Yeah, that might actually be my favorite line.
Right? Does anyone truly know what an Alaya like? Is an Alaya like a thing?
I don't know. But that made me want to go back and watch the movie. Yeah, right. Again.
Well, funny you bring that up, Foom. So you two have watched it fairly recently. I actually haven't watched it in a little bit since I tried to win Clueless Trivia, like God, 5 years ago. So, listeners, anyone out there who wants to join me, Sunday, July 19th is the actual day the movie came out. I'm gonna do a Netflix watch party. I've never done it. We'll see how it goes. But if you want to join, listeners, join us. I'll at least do it, and let's watch it together. We'll figure out this whole watch party thing, since I'm old and I don't really get it. But yeah.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right.
Mm-hmm. And fun fact, I forgot. I found it today. I, of course, because I'm a nerd, wrote a bunch of scripts when I was a kid, and I actually wrote a sequel to Clueless. It was called Clueless 2, The Boys' Side, and the poster that I drew was Josh, Murray, and mm-hmm. Travis, but then I crossed out the boys' side, and now it's just called Clueless 2 Party Time. I guess I changed my mind back then. So,
that's okay. Weird.
Maybe someday we'll do a reading of that script.
All right.
It's 30 pages, so we'll see.
Cool. Well, that's our episode. Thank you guys for sticking with us. Thank you to Greg, Allie, and Jay for your artistic and musical expertise that you lend this podcast. Listeners, please engage with us on social. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are all over the place. Review us on iTunes, and then listen to past episodes if you so desire, and add this to yourlist.com. And we should be back in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. I'm outie.
Big 100.
Yeah.
That's another great line. Right? I'm outie.
So good. Outie.
Outie.
Total Monet.